From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump on Saturday spoke at a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where he continued to spew one lie after another, as he's always done. Perhaps the most egregious lie of the evening was centered on what the anti-abortion movement has termed late-term abortions. This is what Trump said.
Your Democrat governor here in Wisconsin shockingly stated that he will veto legislation that protects Wisconsin babies born alive. Born alive. The baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. I don't think so. Incredible. No, it's incredible. Until this crazy man in Virginia said it, nobody even thought of that, right? Did anyone even think of that? You hear late term. But this is where the baby is actually born. It came out. It's there. It's wrapped. And that's it. Who believes it?
And that's President Donald Trump on Saturday at a political rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, repeating what the medical community and others have denounced as dangerous lies about childbirth, abortion, and women's reproductive rights. My guest is Pamela Merritt, co-director of ReProAction Action. Welcome to the program, Pamela.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, is there such a thing as late-term abortions? What does that term actually mean?
So the term is actually being applied to a completely different scenario by President Trump. So it's important to understand that there are circumstances in which people have what we might term a later term abortion. And that is not what he was describing. What he was describing is every wanted pregnancy, worst nightmare in which somebody is confronted with a birth in which the child is not going to survive and they're trying to create the most comfortable situation with their medical provider. Those are completely two different things, and he is marching to the anti-abortion movement's drumbeat when he tries to connect the two, a gross mischaracterization of both.
So essentially what he is talking about, of course, sounds like murder, right? You take a person who is alive, that is fully formed, and if a doctor or whoever is sitting there determining with the parent that they should kill this person, that would be murder. He is giving the impression the doctors and parents are murdering babies in hospitals, which if that were happening, those people would be arrested and charged with criminal homicide. That's what he is claiming is happening.
And it's not the first time that he's done so. He's in some ways, people say, oh, he's just feeding some sort of chum to his base. But this is a dangerous talking point that has been out there, probably since the 80s, in which the anti-abortion movement is framing providers and healthcare providers as just these murderers, and are describing procedures inaccurately and without a full understanding of the difference, as I said, between abortion care and then compassionate end of life care. And not only does that threaten access to healthcare, because we all know that there are legislators who are going to repeat these lies at state levels and are going to further restrict access to abortion. But they, most importantly, that is the kind of rhetoric that quite literally puts people's lives in danger. That is the kind of thing that gets spouted by anti-abortion terrorists and gets taken and turned into bad actions. And so I would be remiss if I didn't highlight the fact that that it's absolutely unacceptable for the president to spout these lies, but particularly within 24 hours of somebody fueled by his hateful rhetoric, having a terrorist act in a synagogue, one would think that he would use caution, but he appears to be incapable of it.
So essentially, many of his supporters who are armed and who believe everything he tells them essentially feel that this is a green light to act on his lies. One can only imagine an armed anti-abortion activist thinking about the abortion clinic down the street from where they might live and fantasizing about committing some very serious violence. If violence ensues among Trump or by Trump supporters at this point, we can only hold the president responsible.
Yes, I think we should hold the president, if that happens, responsible, but also, honestly, the entire pro-life movement, as they like to call themselves, because, you know, his words were fiery and they were, you know, a very passionate lie. But this is no different than the mischaracterization of abortion care that happens every single day from the movement that opposes access to care. And as a Missourian, I live in a state where we had an arson at a reproductive health care clinic. And it wasn't even the abortion provider. It was just a reproductive health care clinic where, you know, the suspect in that case felt that he was doing something good by, you know, doing major damage to a healthcare provider. So there's real consequences when this kind of rhetoric gets out there.
And for those parents who have, or those people who, and mothers in particular, who have been through a situation where they have carried a wanted pregnancy to full term only to lose their baby within hours of birth or days of birth, isn't this such a slap in the face that Trump is politicizing them? I mean, this, you know, I can only imagine as a parent that it would literally be the worst day of a parent's life where the child that they wanted, And in most cases, it's known that they will die because some health issue, some fatal health issue comes up at the very end of a pregnancy, and a mother has to give birth to a baby that she knows she will get to hold for just a few hours, right?
Right. And, you know, I've been seeing some providers and nurses on Twitter sharing their stories to combat the president's lies. And they are heartbreaking, just gut-wrenching stories, but they are also amazing examples of the kind of compassionate care that reproductive health providers give that often doesn't get talked about. So, I know that the OBGYNs that I know personally do not want to have that kind of outcome, but they prepare the most compassionate, respectful, and obviously medically sound response, and for them to be talked about as if they have a callous disregard for life is just insulting and horrific. And I cannot imagine what it must be like to have gone through an experience like this and have the president of the United States characterize it the way he did.
Right. He said the baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. Unbelievable language to hear from the president about this issue. And you were mentioning there's some healthcare providers. There was one nurse who, Julia Pulver, registered nurse, who posted on Twitter. She said, as a NICU nurse, I served in the bereavement team. We were a special team of nurses tough enough to help new parents go through the worst day of their lives. Parents of babies who had fought so hard for their tiny little lives and weren't going to make it, and parents of babies who, after they were born and wouldn't have their mom's body keeping them alive, would die rather quickly. As these bodies, small bodies, were failing, it was our job to be there with the parents at every step, give them support, and do our best to make some memories of their precious babies that could help ease their impending and overwhelming grief, et cetera. And she went on describing this incredibly difficult time that that parents and even the healthcare providers and nurses, of course, grieve with the parents when they see this loss of life. So he, in his speech, Trump talked about Governor Tony Evers of Wisconsin, saying he would veto this legislation that Scott Walker, who lost to Evers, would have passed. Let's talk about the legislation that has been passed and been promoted and proposed at many states banning late-term abortions. If there's no such real thing as late-term abortions as they define it, what are these bans about? What are these laws about?
It's a great question. So I should make clear that ReproAction is not a lobbying organization. That said, I can obviously answer the question. What we're seeing moving at many state levels are 6-week bans, which are obviously bans that would ban most abortion. Most people don't realize they're pregnant within the first 6 weeks.
Those are so-called heartbeat bans, right?
So-called heartbeat bans, right. And they are essentially total abortion bans. And then what we're also seeing are anti-abortion legislators trying to redefine viability. So we know that a fetus is not viable before 22 weeks. And so then they're basically trying to have 20-week bans. And those are really getting into the zone of when somebody would first be doing screenings for fetal abnormalities. What you were discussing earlier when you said that people find out that something is wrong and that they no longer have a viable pregnancy or that there's going to be a catastrophic birth outcome. So, you know, those are the bands that really, you know, churn my heart because, you know, you're basically talking about, in many cases, in most cases, a very wanted pregnancy. And I do think that there's this tendency particularly when people like Donald Trump and people in the anti-abortion movement talk about these bills, it's important for them to frame women as monsters and to frame reproductive health care as criminal. That's how they're able to restrict it and legislate it. So this whole theme of him and being a savior and women only being mentioned in terms of doing horrible things is key to the ability to restrict access to care. But both of those types of legislation are essentially abortion bans, and we know at ReproAction that the ultimate goal of abortion bans is for women and people who experience pregnancy to go to jail for accessing care.
So in pushing these bills forward, it of course also enables them to have these talking points to say, look, the Democratic governor would veto these bills, the Republican governor would sign them into law. There was another sort of interaction around of the Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, who of course has had his own set of incredibly embarrassing, if you will, to say the least, scandals around racism in his college years, but that as a Democrat would veto any legislation in Virginia around these sorts of bills. And that has been politicized as well, right? And he's, I believe, a pediatric neurologist.
Yes, it has been somewhat politicized. And what is really interesting is both in the case of Governor Evers in Wisconsin, and then you've got Northam. In both of those cases, you have people who ran as pro-choice candidates and won in resounding victories. So, you know, I was watching from the outside. I was really impressed with the fact that somebody was running in Virginia and not dancing around the need for expanding access to reproductive health care and abortion and saying the word in a proactive, stigma-free way. So I think the reason why the president and his followers have to mischaracterize these procedures is because ultimately people support access to abortion and reproductive health care. And the only positive way that they can get people to back away from that support is if they're talking about it in gruesome and grisly terms, and that, and particularly when they talk about it and they remove or dehumanize women and providers so that they can be cast as these villains. So it's going to be interesting to see how we push back against that. But one thing that ReproAction has done is that on our website, we actually have a webinar on the truth about late-term abortion. And we actually center people who provide care and also center people who have had this experience and advocate on behalf of people who have had that experience. So it's on our website, and it is free and available for anybody who would like to listen and learn from people talking the truth.
So abortion and access to abortion remains popular throughout the country. But of course, these activists who are in the minority, but a very vocal minority, have a long-term strategy in their back pocket, right? That they have these state-by-state laws that they know are going to be legally challenged on the based on the fact that access to abortion is a constitutional right, and they hope that that will then be punted all the way to the Supreme Court, where they feel confident that the conservative majority would strike down Roe versus Wade. I mean, we have to keep reminding ourselves that's their end game, right?
That's their end game. And unfortunately, the election of 2016 has some very dire consequences. So there are amazing activists and lawyers who are doing incredible work to try and combat these abortion restrictions and try to lay the legal framework to protect and defend Roe at all levels. But the reality is that the Trump administration has been able to be extremely successful in getting unqualified judges appointed to the federal level. And obviously, they now have a 5-4 conservative majority, an anti-choice majority sitting at the Supreme Court level. The only thing standing between Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to abortion and not having that is Chief Justice Roberts. And I don't know very many people in this country who want their civil rights and their constitutional rights in the hands of somebody who is that conservative and has that that narrow and extreme view of liberty and justice. So we're very aware of what the stakes are. But yes, you are absolutely right that all of these different states are basically tweaking in a race to see who gets their case before the Supreme Court.
How effective has the opposition to Trump's lies been? Because when Trump spews the kinds of lies that he spewed in Green Bay, Wisconsin, that we started talking about, his base eats it up. And isn't it critical for other elected officials in particular to counter them? And we saw some folks do that. I mean, Senator Patty Murray responded on Twitter, Senator Bernie Sanders, and others have as well. Do you feel that there could be more?
Of course. I always feel I would love for politicians from throughout the real world and not his universe, call him out on his lies in robust and enthusiastically call him out, because the truth is so important now, and it is particularly important when we're talking about healthcare access. But I also am reminded that, you know, that Trump's base can't elect him. You know, Trump's base is that hardened 24% to 37% of folks who have decided that they're all in for a president who is going to fight for white supremacy. So I think it's important to know that, you know, we need to be speaking to folks who might not necessarily be very political, to people who probably would say that they're turned off by politics. And we need to make sure that they understand that you might be turned off by politics, but you will experience reproductive health care in your lifetime. And you need to understand that the fight for access to care is political, and we need people to weigh in and fight for the truth.
I understand, Pamela, that your organization has also, of course, in your efforts to combat Trump's lies, that you recently in April ran a billboard truck to circle the White House about a film, a propaganda film that that the White House was screening. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. So the White House decided to screen an outrageous propaganda film called Unplanned. And to give that kind of propaganda film, anti-abortion lies, and that misrepresents the abortion procedures, what providers do, the type of people who get abortions, who are, you know, everyday folks. And we were shocked and appalled that anybody who is in elected office would dignify that film with a screening. So we made certain that we wanted to call out the president and his administration for dignifying the film with a screening in the White House. And then also, you know, to us, it builds upon our work to push back against abortion stigma, and also to stand up and stand shoulder to shoulder with providers. And movies like Unplanned are just as dangerous in the lies that they perpetuate, and the behavior they justify towards people who have abortions and providers, just as dangerous as the president standing up in front of a huge crowd and calling abortion providers murderers. So we were proud to be able to do that visual action to push back against that.
And of course, we should keep reminding ourselves that there is very much a race and class dimension to these attacks on women's reproductive justice, reproductive rights, rather, isn't there? I mean, if you're wealthy, if you're white, you have more access to private health care and to your own reproductive care. And this really disproportionately impacts poor women of color, right? When you have these attacks and these with this whittling away of facilities, especially for reproductive health care?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we have an infant and maternal mortality campaign in our organization. And, you know, I am a Missourian and I live in a state where Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die as a result of a childbirth, of pregnancy. And Black infants are 3 to 4 times more likely to die before their first year of life. So there are very real consequences to this lack of prioritization of reproductive health care, and also the lack of funding for reproductive health care. So every second that somebody spends fighting for abortion restrictions is a second of legislative time that they're not spending fighting for access to health care that would actually help save Black babies and mothers' lives, and also would create a framework that would improve birth outcomes for everybody. But what we know is that the exact same legislative bodies that claim to be pro-life are not interested in dealing with food insecurity, are not interested in filling, you know, healthcare gaps when they don't expand Medicaid. They are not at all interested in picking up bills that would help us have a better understanding of infant and maternal mortality. So they are hypocrites in every way, shape, and form. And we need to push back against this false idea that they somehow own the mantle of pushing and protecting for any life. The work that we do in Missouri is to try and improve the outcomes, and for people who are the head of their family, are the entire world for their family. And we should be able to depend on elected officials to prioritize that, but we can't. So anytime you see clinics close, when you see people talk about cutting healthcare coverage and cutting access to providers, when rural hospitals close, that impacts poor people and overwhelmingly Black women and women of color.
Pamela, give out a website for ReproAction.
I sure do. I have reproaction.org is our website, and we are also on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as ReproAction.
Wonderful. We'll link to those from our website. Thank you so much for the work you do and for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Pamela Merritt, co-director of ReproAction. We've been discussing Trump's lies around abortion. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.